This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit is sponsored by Bluehost. Bluehost offers a great deal for just $6.95 per month. You get your own .com domain name, you get unlimited hosting, unlimited bandwidth, and one-click installation of a WordPress blog, which is, I think, one of their best features. Go check it out, sqpn.com/Bluehost. And by the Amazon store. Click on the link on our website, thehobbit.sqpn.com, before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, the show that we use to chat about the Hobbit productions, about the movies, the books, and, well, the book, and then the entire Tolkien world around it. Joining me today, as usual, is my good friend Dave Kale. Good morning, Dave.
Hello, Father Roderick. How are you, sir?
I'm back again.
We're glad you made it.
There in New York for Blog World New Media Expo. Had a great time learning more about blogging, podcasting, web TV. And now I am excited to be back again and to catch up on the latest news from New Zealand. And while I was in New York, I saw that there was a new production video and I couldn't watch it because I didn't take a computer with me, only an iPad. Plus, I was very busy, so I just didn't have time to watch it. And so I watched it only this morning, and wow, we got spoiled there in many ways. What a great video again. I love how they turn almost into little works of art. It's even beyond the quality of some of the extras that you find on most DVDs and Blu-rays nowadays.
Yeah, it is amazing. The production value on these videos just keeps getting better and better and better, especially when it's done by Orlando Bloom.
Well, yes, that was quite a surprise. He's been there all along. And now we finally know why he was hired and paid such a high salary to make behind-the-scenes footage.
To make a documentary.
Well, let's go over that. The details of that production video, as well as the other news from New Zealand.
Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I ain't been dropping no eaves, sir. Honest.
What did you hear? Speak.
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
Well, for those of us that either haven't seen the production video yet, which I don't think that anyone in our audience is in that category, or for people who just forgot about the details, and we might have actually people listening to this months after this production video was made. Dave, can you remind me of the things that we've seen in that video?
The one we most recently did.
Yeah.
The production video seven. I went through, watched it last night and took some notes. And basically this one, whereas the previous videos have been focused kind of on either elements of the first film or more on location type stuff, looking at various locations that they visited, you know, especially outdoor locations and showing off the scenery of New Zealand. This one's was more focused on the actual studio itself, and they gave us a whirlwind tour, and it really was a whirlwind tour. They went through each part of the studio very, very quickly. But it was a whirlwind tour of the studio where they do a lot of the indoor shooting and things like makeup and a lot of the constructions of sets, the creation of various props. We stopped by Weta at one point. We looked at the various sound stages and all that kind of stuff.
And we get introduced to a ton of people that we've never seen before.
Oh, a ton, yes.
And you just get a good sense from this video of the scope of the production and how many people are involved and also, you know, all the non-glorious roles. We all know the actors and the director and the composer and some of the art people, but we totally do not know all the other, you know, faces behind the names in the credit when the credits roll. I always, almost always, sit through the credits just to kind of pay homage to everyone that has been involved in movies. And sometimes you see hundreds of names scroll by. I just recently watched the Avengers, and man, that list just goes on and on and on. And I loved it that in this video we finally get to meet some of those people, and they come to life, and you realize, well, wait a minute, that is, it's almost worthy of a movie by itself. This whole synergy of creativity and talent, and. Yeah, it was just amazing to see how that all works together. And I have a hard time just believing that they can all, that everything just works, and that somehow these movies get made with so many hundreds of people involved. I mean,
especially these modern blockbusters, right?
Yeah. We have a hard time putting this podcast together with the two of us. So what if we were like 200 or 400?
Yeah.
And you gotta give it to Peter Jackson that he stays so calm, so cool, always kind of relaxed in these videos. You really don't get the sense that he's stressing out or that he's, you know, super preoccupied with things.
Well, I think probably what he does is they let him participate in those you saw the stunt rehearsal, right? Mm-hmm. The people beating on each other, yeah, with the bright green swords. Mm-hmm. I think they just let him – they give him a sword and they take everyone else's way and just lets him beat on everybody.
So he can release his anger. No, yes. Seriously, in the production video, I got the idea that almost everyone that they interviewed was like, oh, it's so busy right now and it's so we're working hard. And the most relaxed guy in these videos is Peter Jackson himself, which is great because you want a director to be – kind of relax. And I don't think he's playing it. I think he's truly enjoying the process of this movie.
Well, I hope maybe part of it is the fact that he realizes that he's got a couple weeks left and then he's done forever, right? Apart
that
from
is edit, true.
Sitting in the editing room.
Yeah, at least for the actual shooting.
Yeah, and so maybe he has the sort of, especially since he's done this before, he knows he really needs to try and take stock and enjoy the process while he's involved, because it's, you know, if you're too heads down, too focused on the task at hand right now, you may not realize, you know, the significance of the fact that this is going to be your last time working with these people on this project.
Yes. Although
unless there's a Silmarillion someday.
I hope so. Perhaps. I do think that, however, that this most of what we saw in this video was shot perhaps several months ago, judging from the weather, because it was still pretty sunny in most of these sequences. And right now it's wintertime. It's cold. It's raining. It's they wouldn't walk around outside like this.
Well, that's probably true. But you did catch that he did mention toward the end that they were going to put out one more video, one more blog, he calls them.
Yes.
That the final shooting blog will be in a few weeks after they wrap. So.
But we know that is currently happening, right? They're wrapping up now.
I was just thinking if they filmed this a few months ago, either he added that bit in recently, or he knew that he was going to release this now. And
I think so. I think that they've been planning these production videos, and they must have a very well-constructed PR campaign around this, and these videos are part of that. So I bet you that they have planned this. I mean, even the editing of this one video, it's a ton of work. There were so many fast cuts in it. Then they have to blur out all the things that we're not supposed to see.
Yeah, that's right. Somebody has to go through and watch it very carefully and say, oh, look.
Yeah, this is
not the model in the background. That's, they're not supposed to see that. Blur it out.
Right. This is not the improvised iPhone video. This has been planned, and some very good quality people have been working on this. So, and I wouldn't be surprised that we would see this again in some form as extras on a DVD or Blu-ray. They did that with King Kong, where they had a very extensive production blog. Actually, I think they did updates almost every week. And then they bundled them together on a DVD, and they sold that even before the movie came out. I remember buying that because I just had the YouTube videos or the kind of the bad quality web version of that on my computer, and then you could watch all that on, you know, in real good quality. And I thought it was a great idea because, of course, in that way they can generate some more money from all the work that has been put into the production of these videos. So what did we see? There were a lot of glimpses of things. What are the things that you remember that made you go, whoa, what's that?
I honestly didn't pay that close. I didn't notice those things very much. I was focused more, I was listening to the explanations of things, and I was more taken by like I was particularly interested in the scale double stuff. That was really interesting to see all the little people dressed up like the slightly bigger people as dwarves and stuff. I was really interested in the weapons. I didn't know, for some reason, maybe it's because I was watching it too late at night, but I didn't notice that many sort of like, oh, look, I think that's X, Y, and Z from the film. We haven't seen that before type moments. So well, I'm more interested to hear what you saw.
They did include glimpses, and sometimes it was just 2 or 3 seconds, and then they moved on clearly to, you know, not show too much. I think most of the things that they try to hide from us are related to the second movie, and there was actually this one scene where you see some props or actually some models of a set, and there was this big flashing sign on top of it like movie 2 forbidden. And but there is a lot of green screen that that they did show, and that I believe is part of the second movie. The most notable being one scene where you see a dwarf, and I don't really remember who it was, and he's being kind of he's tied to a cable and a sort of, it looks like a boxing thing you use to train your boxing. I'm not sure. I'm not very good at boxing, so I don't know what that thing is. This big bag, this rectangular bag, a punching bag.
I think it was like it was when they were talking about Glowin's axe, and they had there was the dwarf standing up on top of something. He had like a cable suspended him, and he shouts for the axe.
Yeah, that was, I think, right before, right after it. And then you see a short scene, and you have kind of this boxing bag or punching bag, and it hangs from a cable from the ceiling in front of a green screen. And there is a dwarf hanging on to it, and he's being swung around. And there are markers on that particular, you know, punching bag, which I think is going to be a scene from, you know, the whatever encounter they have with the dragon, because that could totally be like a neck of the dragon, or I don't know, a leg or a tail of the dragon, and just one of these dwarves kind of hanging on to it and you know, holding on for dear life.
Right.
Not sure, but could be.
At 11:08, there's a, in front of a green screen, let's see if I can get the little marker there. Dang it. Oh, so close.
It's difficult with these videos.
It looks like they're having a meal or something. Was this at 11:08? What was
this? Yes, it's the scene, it's part of the sequence where they show us the doubles, the small people.
Yes.
And yes, they're eating, long tables, lots of people. And in the scene, you see both, you know, big elves or regular size elves, and then of course the dwarves have to be smaller size. So yep. I was thinking perhaps this is something that takes place in Mirkwood, or I don't know. Although in Mirkwood they don't get to.
So they were the one I'm thinking of. They were sitting at a long table. Is that what you saw too?
Yeah.
So I would assume that would be either Bjorn's hall, or maybe at the last homely house.
Oh, that could be. Yes, yeah, this might be Rivendell.
Mm-hmm.
Possible, so, because there is a very long table in one of those rooms. I'm referring to I only know the last homely house from the game, but there's this one room, I think, on the right side where you have a fireplace and a very long table, and it's clearly where they eat.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we know from the books that there is the Hall of Fire, I think.
That must be the one. Yes.
Yeah, they go. Well, actually, there's two. There's the place where Frodo goes to the banquet, and then there's later the Hall of Fire, where they go and hear stories, and that's where he finds Bilbo. So it could be either of those locations.
Right.
Did you see around 9:30? Did you see the dwarves floating down the constructed river?
Yes. That was actually very cool to see much more of the scene with the barrels.
For one thing, that's pretty awesome. They just built a whole series of rapids on the set.
It looked like something from a theme park, you know, in Disney World. You have these rides with water where you sit in a boat.
I was thinking as I was watching this, if they ever create J.R.R. Tolkien world, like the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, if they ever create an amusement park, they need to make this ride.
The barrel ride.
Floating in a barrel down.
Yes. Waiting time, 3 hours.
But this, if we use the operating theory that they are not going to show us anything that's in the second film, then we have to assume that we're going to see them see at least part of the barrel ride.
Yes,
at the end of the first film.
That's pretty obvious. They showed so much of it, including, which I thought was very interesting, a really big barrel. And this was in a part where we get to meet the two artists. I always forget their names. The two, you know, great. Oh gosh, you know who I mean. The guys who make the drawings.
Lee and John Yao.
There you go. In that scene, we get to see one big barrel. It's unpainted, and someone sits in it. I think it's one. It's not Alan Lee, but the other guy. And so it's a life size. I wonder if that is a barrel that they use to show us, you know, the beginning of when they are thrown into the river. If we were going to see the actors actually inside of the barrel, and it's only at the end of their barrel ride that they will open up the top of it and will pop out like we've seen in those stunt sequences. So that would be consistent with what we read in the book, where, you know, at least for the first part, they're kind of, the barrels are closed.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, that is the one weird part. There's that large barrel during the art part where like a person can sit in there and not even completely bent over either. Mm-hmm. Like it's a pretty huge thing. But these barrels that they're in when they're floating in the water are much smaller.
Smaller, yeah. So I'm thinking it's probably something they will use to show us kind of the inside of a barrel and perhaps, you know, dwarf tumbling around.
And the barrels they're in the water, I'm kind of curious how they make those work, because I wonder how they keep them from capsizing and filling up with water and stuff.
Well, we saw the half barrel with Bilbo in it on wheels.
Yes, so I'm wondering if that's what it is.
Perhaps underwater they have these wheels and they just, you know, are able to kind of walk in it. It almost looked like what they have for small children, you know, toddlers. When they are unable to walk for long distances, they have these things in this, basically has four wheels. You sit in it and you walk, but at the same time, you're kind of suspended
It really looks like the barrels are kind of floating because the front dwarf's barrel is sort of tipping like it would if it was floating, or it could be he's tipping it. I don't know. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the fact that my kind of assumption about the way the first film would end was that we wouldn't actually see the full river ride.
Mm-hmm.
We would just see them escaping the dungeons of the elf king,
right,
or the elven king, and then we would see them sort of going out onto the open river after going through the sort of, you know, the wine barrel hatch.
Yeah,
and that would be it. And then the full river ride, if we even saw them, if we even got to see many scenes of them on the river, would be saved till the second film. But if we use the operating theory that any scene we see now is likely to be in the first film, then maybe we're actually going to finish this film with them arriving at Lake Town.
Yeah, that has been my theory all along. I remember in Riddles of the Dark, that was kind of my position, that they arrive at Lake Town, and then the camera will move us to the mountain. We'll go inside some hole, a big tunnel. And at the end of the tunnel, there will be a light, and it's not going to be a train. It's going to be a dragon. That's kind of the fact that they refer to that. Stan Lee said that. I was like, yeah, that could be the end of movie one. We'll go. Just, I can totally see the camera just doing this big movement, mostly CGI probably, just moving through this big dark tunnel and then ending up in the big, you know, room with all the treasure, and then seeing just a light or seeing a glimpse of the dragon, because they have to give us the dragon in the first movie as a teaser. I think that's the best teaser you can get. And then the second movie will probably start with the dragon. Or start with Lake Town. I don't know. If you want to open with a bang, you want to start with a dragon. But that's nor here nor there. There are a few other scenes that I thought were very interesting. There is a green screen sequence where there's a fire. Lots of trees are on fire.
Yeah, that's entirely indoor too, in a specially built studio, which is pretty cool.
We know at one point that they put the forest on fire, right? And then they have to. What was that scene? Isn't that Mirkwood as well? I remember that we discussed this.
I was thinking that would be right when they've escaped the goblins in the Misty Mountains,
right?
So before Mirkwood.
Okay.
But yeah, I would presume, unless that's the dragon burning stuff, then I think that's what it must be. So, yeah, that was awesome. The amount of the technology that they've built to do that is pretty cool.
Yeah. There were some more scenes that they showed us. This is the scene with the warg. Yeah. After the Misty Mountains. Yeah. Also, a scene where you see a couple of dwarves and they are in looks like a grotto or a cave or something like that. And it looked as if they were surrounded by treasure, which I was like a bit puzzled about. It's like, that can't be Smaug's dragon. I don't think that we're going to see that.
I don't know where in the trailer this is, or in the production video this is.
No, I have no idea. It was the scene where this French guy takes us behind the scenes. He's like, well, I'm about to shoot, and hush now, they're going to begin. You remember that one? And so probably the cave, the troll's cave.
Yeah, yep, that's probably right, because the trolls do have a bunch of...
They're hoarders too.
Yep, they have a lot of treasure there. So but I bet that's the troll's cave.
Yeah, it's not the... It didn't look like a huge treasure yet, but it was kind of cool to see that as well.
What did you think of the models that they built, of all the sets that they would build?
Well, beautiful. I was wondering what that circular room was. Remember this white model? And it looked to me as exactly like the Elrond's library in Lord of the Rings Online. Same kind of configuration. Definitely something from either Rivendell. Perhaps Mirkwood could be Mirkwood as well, if they build stuff in trees. Most of what the elves do is circular anyway.
Yeah, I would venture to guess that it's probably the Elven King.
Also some set pieces or models for the second movie. They just look like dark kind of cave-like constructions. I think that what they tried to blur out, even with the big, you know, icon on top of it, like this can't be just a regular troll cave, because there's nothing too secret about that if it's just a cave. But then I was like, this is probably Smaug's cave. Stuff that we're going to see when Smaug is going to be revealed. And because that would make sense that they want to keep that a secret for later on. Because everybody, of course, wonders what that will look like ultimately.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big reveals that they want to keep secret.
Yes. So, again, confirming that we probably will see Smaug only in the second movie, or at least his cave. We'll only see that in the second movie. I loved seeing just all the, you know, costumes and the fat suits and the hair and, oh my goodness.
Yes, all the prosthetics and stuff.
Oh my lord. There's this one moment where the actor goes into a trailer and is like, oh, you come back in a couple of hours. And then boom, it's totally unrecognizable.
Yeah, Peter Hambleton, who's playing Glowin.
It's going to be quite, how would you say that? It's a bit jarring for them, like, everybody's going to recognize Bilbo because the hobbits are not that. I mean, they have like fake hair. That's all. But the dwarves, some of them are just totally different from their real life appearance.
Yeah, no one's going to recognize them on the street.
Well, and that actually might be a positive thing, because at least you can live your life without being recognized.
So one thing that struck me was the fact that when he was going around visiting these guys in their trailers, and that's what we got. We had right at the start. We had Luke Evans taking us on a tour of their little trailer park. All these guys in their trailers were emerging in makeup already, and wearing their prosthetics. And I realized, I guess every day they have to go and they have to, like, very first thing they do when they arrive on set is get their prosthetics and everything put on. And then they spend the rest of the day just hanging out wearing their prosthetics. So there was the one dwarf who was, like, drinking a beer, standing on the front doorstep of his trailer.
Yes.
So they have to be, while they're eating and stuff, they have to be really careful not to screw anything up.
Right. Right. And probably they filmed this early in the morning, and one by one they just go into these trailers, or perhaps even two by two, get their prosthetics on, and then have to wait for each other.
Yep. And I imagine probably before any time that they're, like, let's say they get the prosthetic on and then they have 3 hours before their shoot, I bet that somebody probably has to thoroughly check them over and make sure that their makeup and prosthetics are still look fine, because you don't want them like filming a scene and then a couple hours later coming back filming another scene and the nose is on crooked now.
Indeed. I don't think that is going to be a problem. Even for regular TV, they have people running around, you know, powdering you all the time. So let alone with these complicated prosthetics. What did you think of the appearance of Orlando Bloom? He looked exactly like
which makes sense. He is an elf after all.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense him being a human actor. I was like, how does he do that?
He has aged extremely well.
Yeah, unbelievable. They didn't give away anything except for that, you know, you shouldn't be fighting orcs. That's the only thing they say. But
well, the really weird part is to see Legolas wearing a hooded sweatshirt.
True. Yeah, that was a bit weird. It's very modern elf. Yes. And then the end scene was just hilarious. The fight scene with the
Karen.
Small guy. Kieran Shaw.
Yes.
That was brilliant. I wondered if that was actually a real scene that they just replaced him in that particular fight scene, or whether this was just kind of made up.
Oh, that's a good point.
Because all the fighting looked pretty convincing.
I was wondering if they had choreographed that specifically for him, but maybe he's actually acting out a Legolas battle sequence.
It looked like it, or at least perhaps he did something that, you know, he already did for a stunt sequence before. It might be one of the dwarves, or he seems to be a stand-in just for Bilbo.
Yes.
But it
was and here he's wearing Legolas's wig.
Yeah.
So.
Crazy.
It's interesting. I have a suspicion, just looking at this, it looks like it's probably, well, I don't know. I was going to say the Mirkwood set, but it could be pretty much any outdoor set, because it's just like rocks and trees and the green screen in the background. So they could be fighting the goblins at the, you know, before they get treed and set on fire, maybe.
Yes.
I don't think that this is the Battle of Five Armies set. I don't think they'd show us that yet. So
no, not likely.
If my money would be on just that, this is just a fun little thing that they choreographed on one of their generic sets.
I think so too, but it was just hilarious.
Yes.
Totally didn't see that coming. I thought, oh, it's over, and then you get this extra. It was almost like what they do with the superhero movies nowadays, where you sit through the credits and then you get this surprise. This was wonderful.
Yes, that's true.
Now, wasn't this Kieran, wasn't he also an actor in the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
Yeah, I think he was a stand-in for Bilbo, or not Bilbo,
for Frodo.
For some of the hobbits?
I think so, for Frodo, or perhaps one of the dwarves. Been trying to find him on IMDb, but I might misspell his name because I couldn't really find it. Is there anything else that we need to discuss about this production video before we move on?
Well, let me pull up my notes again. Let's see. I noted that their biggest soundstage is called K-Stage, K for King Kong.
Mm-hmm.
So I presume they probably built that for that. Let's see. There was B stage, which he referred to as an old shed, which I believe they said is where they did a lot of the Lord of the Rings sets. So that's definitely one of their older sound stages.
Right.
I really enjoyed seeing the folks working on weapons at Weta Workshop, and everything else. I mean, they make everything there.
Yeah.
Prosthetics, weapons, scale double equipment, everything. Did you catch when they were talking about the huge backlot green screen? Did you catch the comment about how they use a big cloth to block the sun?
Yes. Yeah. Makes sense. Because especially for green screen, you cannot have direct sunlight because it will mess up the even lighting of the screen. And that was pretty cool. And I do think that green screen, the backlot, is what they used. You know, remember when we talked about the photos, the spy photos with the smoke, and there were green screens on both sides? It looks like this was just one of the two sides, and it's multi-purpose. They use it all the time, which I didn't know.
Yep, I thought that was sort of an interesting insight into how the green screen is used. I thought you would be interested. Let's see what else. I thought the four square game was hilarious.
What was that again? Oh yes,
that was the game they were playing.
Right,
bouncing ball. And then the other interesting thing that I've seen other people mention was that it looks like Glowin is using the same axe that Gimli used in the first film.
Yes, so
they're going to have a continuity of weapons.
That was awesome, and it was just a slightly smaller version, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, because I guess John Rhys Davies is like a massive dude.
He's huge, yes.
So I think that's all the things that I noticed. I'm sure I'll probably watch it again later today and then be like, oh, crap.
So, yes.
We'll have to have a part two, you know, like things that we noticed the second time around discussion next week.
Yes, or we could post something on the blog whenever we have a... You know, something else that we absolutely need to mention. I've been looking at the IMDb entry for Kieran. He's been in a lot of movies. My goodness.
Yes.
He did lots of miscellaneous things and stunts in The Fellowship of the Ring. He was in Titanic. Can you believe that?
I'm looking at it too.
I mean, Narnia, yes.
Narnia.
Raiders of the Lost Ark. That's amazing.
Uh-huh. Star Wars Episode 6.
Yeah, crazy.
Dark Crystal. I think he might have been the skill double for John Rhys Davies.
He's in
a lot of things with John Rhys Davies.
Hmm. He was an Ewok. He was in the Dark Crystal as well. Wow. Unbelievable. He's been around for quite a while. Those are movies from when I was young, which is a long time ago.
Yes, he's a veteran.
He's had
a great career.
All right, let's take a short break. And then after that, I want to hear all about that very controversial romance that is the talk of the day.
There and Back Again, A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back, wander the paths of Mirkwood. Visit Lake Town, see the Lonely Mountain again. That age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
I want to very briefly mention our sponsors, Bluehost. Bluehost is a great hosting company, which I've been using for a couple of years now for my personal blog, fatherroderick.com. And just this morning, I started tinkering with a blog again. And I actually wanted to kind of reboot it, start a new layout, do a new install, because I've not been really maintaining my blog that much. But since I've been to Blog World last week and I've been so motivated by other bloggers to start blogging again, I was like, I need to kind of refresh that. And I was amazed to see again how quickly you can set up a blog. It's basically just clicking a button and it will just install it within not even a minute. And then you have a full-fledged WordPress blog. You can use any free theme that's out there or even a paid-for theme. And your blog can basically, for just $6.95 per month, can be looking like, you know, any other professional blog. And I know that there are people that are making thousands of dollars every month on a site that is just hosted on Bluehost. So it's I think it's a great deal what they offer. Just the ease of use. If there is, like, for instance, there was a new version of the blog software, and when I logged into my Bluehost account, it gave me a warning. It said, you know, your WordPress installation is out of date. Do you want us to install it? You just click yes, and there you go. Just 2 seconds later, you're totally up to date. That's the kind of extra service that I appreciate so much from Bluehost, and that's why I recommend it so often. So if you've been thinking about a blog, whether it's Hobbit related or anything else, or even just a personal blog for your vacation photos, I mean, lots of people are prepping for their summer holiday, and you want to have your own vacation blog that you can show to your friends and relatives, then I think Bluehost is a fantastic way to just get started and not having to worry about the installation or about the success of your blog, because it's a fixed price and they won't charge you if your website becomes a huge success and Peter Jackson links to it on his Facebook page. So go check it out, sqpn.com/Bluehost. We've got people signing up for new accounts almost every week. We do get a very generous, how would you say that, premium if anyone signs up. So it could also be a great way for you to support our podcasting efforts. But that's not why we recommend it. It's just a great service, and I've been very, very happy with it. And so if you're thinking about blogging, go check it out, sqpn.com/Bluehost.
What's happening out there?
Shall I describe it to you? Or would you like me to find you a box?
So that was, of course, the grinning of Gimli. And we all remember Gimli being quite infatuated after meeting Galadriel for the first time. And there's even this scene on the extended version of the DVDs where, you know, when he receives his gift from Galadriel, he's like, oh, he's totally in love. So love between a dwarf and an elf, even though it's kind of platonic love, is not unheard of. But now, apparently, there is going to be a similar romance, or perhaps even something more serious, in The Hobbit, which is not in the book. Tell me about it, Dave.
Sure. So in this month's Total Film magazine, and you can find out more by going to totalfilm.com, they published the Future 100 article. I think this is an annual article where they talk about rising stars who are actors and stuff. Basically, people who are kind of emerging as you know, maybe the next big thing. Mm-hmm. They have a top 100. So, for example, number 20 is Ryan Gosling, and people like him. And I think it maybe isn't just actors, because I'm flipping through and I'm starting to see that there's also films and other things. So. And technologies and whatnot. But there are 6 Hobbit actors that are in the top 30. In fact, they are 25 through 30. I think they did that so they could put them all on a pair of facing pages and do a little feature on them. Mm-hmm. It's titled The New Faces of the Hobbit, The Rising Stars About to Conquer Middle Earth. So the OneRing.net scanned this page in because there was a tantalizing little tidbit under number 25, Aidan Turner. He plays Keeley, one of the brothers, Feely and Keeley. And Keeley is kind of he's the one that everyone's referring to as sort of the heartthrob hot
right.
dwarf.
Yes.
He's the guy that's kind of more attractive, the more attractive dwarf than you would expect.
Yeah. By the way, we did an episode about those hot dwarfs with the Tolkien professor. So if you go to our website, thehobbit.sqpn.com, and do a search for hot dwarves, you'll find that you'll hear the Tolkien professor's take on that.
Yes. That was a great episode, I remember.
It was.
So anyway, this is Aidan Turner playing Keeley. He's also apparently in BBC Three's Being Human. Mm-hmm. In their interview with him, he's Irish, he says, They ask him about being a hot dwarf. He says, "I'm glad you said that." He said, "Well, it's not the worst thing I've been called." And then he goes on and says, they go on to explain that Keeley's part has been expanded from the novel. As well as chasing treasure, he's also pursuing female elf Tauriel. But is he setting his sights too high? And Aiden says, "I guess he knows nothing can ever happen. She's about 20 feet tall and he's only 2. So this set the online Tolkien fandom ablaze.
Really?
There's a lot of people who are I won't say they're upset. They're very interested and very actively interested in what the significance of this is. So a lot of people speculating that, oh, there's going to be dwarf elf romance and things like
goodness.
That.
Oh my goodness.
I haven't had a whole lot of time to digest it. I was supposed to do a Riddles in the Dark episode with Corey yesterday, and we actually ended up having to postpone it. And we were going to spend a little bit of time talking about it. So I hadn't really thought about it, but you know,
I'd love to hear the Tolkien professor's take on that romance.
Yes. We were reading through it, so the idea of doing some romance, I think my first reaction is horror.
yes.
That I'd rather they didn't. But reading through this now, I'm starting to realize, I guess he knows nothing can ever happen. She's about 20 feet tall and he's only 2. I'm starting to wonder if they aren't blowing this out of proportion and it couldn't maybe just be one little moment where like Keeley reveals some attraction to this elf, but there's really no interaction and no real romance. Or maybe it's a moment where – or maybe it's an element like Gimli and Galadriel where he admires her, but there's not an actual romance or anything like that.
That was my first thought. It's like this could be just almost a kind of a reference to what we've seen in The Lord of the Rings. It's, you know, even though there is a lot of animosity between elves and dwarves, the occasional dwarf might fall for the charms of the female elves. And so in that way, it would almost be an homage to what we've already seen, and which is also part of, you know, the Tolkien's narrative, at least for The Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
So it's not totally incompatible with what Tolkien might have written. I was wondering, you know, what I loved about this, the Gimli Galadriel thing, was that it was a totally impossible love. I mean, Galadriel is like this super elf, and then Gimli is this, you know, the total opposite. And that's why it was so comical and so endearing almost. However, Keeley, being kind of the heartthrob a dwarf, I don't think that would work as a comical element. So it might be a little bit more. Perhaps it's the other way around. Perhaps.
Yeah, that's true.
That would be scary.
Wouldn't that be a turnabout?
That would be interesting. Very interesting. Like Tauriel falls in love with a dwarf, knowing that it will never happen.
I think that's I think that's sort of maybe the most interesting part about this, because with Gimli and Galadriel, it's really the significance of the moment is the fact that it's kind of the other side of the coin of the Gimli Legolas relationship. Its significance is in the fact that it's building bridges between dwarves and elves, and that his admiration for her is. It's the fact that he recognizes or he admires her beauty as much as he admires the beauty of a rock or a gem or a piece of treasure. and in the books, the groundwork for it is the fact that she speaks to him in his own language, which that's what really kind of – he's kind of standing there scowling and stuff because Celeborn makes these kind of mean insinuations about, well, if I'd known you guys had stirred up the Balrog, I wouldn't have let the dwarf back in. It's all your faults, yada, yada, yada. And so he's standing there scowling. And then when Galadriel scolds Celeborn and then speaks to Gimli in dwarvish language, I think Tolkien kind of describes this sort of moment where he kind of looks up at her and his scowl disappears. And it's kind of a nice moment. This is different because Tauriel's not so lofty. She's not. I mean, no matter what they decide to do with her, she's not Galadriel. How could she be? Galadriel is pretty much Galadriel and Elrond are the two biggest. You know, like the best elves, you could say, or the highest elves.
They're the Superman and Wonder Woman of Tolkien's world.
Exactly, of Middle Earth at that point. And she is, I mean, she really is even above Elrond because she's the oldest elf left in Middle Earth at this point.
One of the few. She's more kind of Gandalf level.
exactly. So Tauriel, no matter what they do with her, she's not that lofty. So this is really more kind of almost equal. So there is maybe more of a potential for an actual equal exchange in terms of romance. So I'll be interested to see what they'll do with it. I don't know. I'm ambivalent. There's part of me that's like, you know, is resistant to any change to the story, of course. Mm-hmm. But it could be interesting if they do it right. I just don't want any sappy romance.
No. But I don't think, I mean, it's such an impossible romance that there has to be, let's say some tension in there in some way or another. I mean, and it has a tragic tinge to it, of course.
Yes.
Very tragic.
Yeah, if anything happens at all, it's going to be a tragedy because Feely and Keely both die at the Battle of Five Armies. Spoiler alert.
Well, you know what I'm thinking now that you mention that? This could actually be a very good narrative addition to the story because it could potentially give the death of Keely much more weight because we've invested. If this romance is anything but just a throwaway line, we might invest more in, you know, the character of Keely because we root for him somehow, or because there's this romantic emotional connection to Tauriel. Tauriel might be, well, actually, I'm pretty sure that Tauriel is going to be part of the Battle of Five Armies. And so it would give much more weight to the death, more relief to his death than if, you know, he's just one of the people that die or one of the dwarves that die. I'm not sure about Feely, but
that's a really good point because in the book, we're not that invested. There's still basically all these dwarves and none of whom we really get to know particularly well, except for maybe Thorin and Balin and a couple others. And then at the end, after the Battle of Five Armies, we kind of get a brief laundry list of all the ones that died. And we're like, oh, well, that's sad.
Yeah.
And you're right. This is a way we could actually have an emotional connection to an individual dwarf's death if Tauriel is sad about it.
And Tauriel narratively could also become like the almost the ambassador of the other elves in that battle. How do you make a battle interesting? How do you make sure that the audience keeps involved? Because you've got the massive scenes, and it might look fantastic. And this is a mistake that is made in a lot of these big budget movies. You see these fantastic battles, but you don't care because you don't know anyone, you know, individually that is involved in this. So it never becomes personal. With this romantic link, that could totally kind of give that final battle much more emotional weight. And now that I'm talking about it, I'm thinking, what if, you know, we see the death of Keely. It has a huge emotional impact because Tauriel is there. We see Toriel's grief. And that will help us, you know, invest emotionally in grief about what happens. I'm thinking there was this Jesus movie by Mel Gibson a couple of years ago, the Passion of the Christ.
Yes,
and you see and it's done in a very graphic way, and that's kind of the downside of that movie is they really try to show everything. However, as a viewer, and especially if you're kind of like watching a lot of these movies, like me, I was kind of turning off the emotional switch in my head because you know it's all prosthetics, you know it's all fake blood. So the gruesomeness took me out of that whole way of the cross. The moment that I actually was very touched or moved by what was happening was not by seeing, you know, Jesus being tortured this much, but it was by seeing that through the eyes of the character of Mary, his mother. And at one point, you see her mourning and grieving. And that just gave so much emotional power to what was happening. So I'm thinking that technique might also be used by Peter Jackson in the second movie. If we see Toriel, and we know that Toriel is going to be someone that we're going to invest in. I mean, if you look at the character of Kate in Lost, played mm-hmm. by the same actress, it's a very nice person. It's the what's her name again? The actress,
Evangeline
Lilly, is a very likable character, a likable person, and so I imagine that if we see her grief, we kind of feel for her and we feel her grief. Now, what if? And this is pure speculation. What if for Toriel, this whole Toriel Keeley thing becomes a mirror of the Strider? My brain is still jet lagged. The other romance in Lord of the Rings between. Help me there.
Aragorn and Arwen.
And the big thing that they try to convey there is like Arwen can't die because she's an elf. So if Aragorn, if she gets involved in this romance with Aragorn, then you know ultimately she'll survive Aragorn and she'll be lonely for the rest of her life. That's kind of the whole thing that Elrond tries to warn his daughter against. Mm-hmm. Now, what if that is mirrored in these two movies where we see Keeley die and then Toriel just realizing that, you know, she can die. And then perhaps choosing to, I don't know, sacrifice herself and making a big difference by that in the movie. I mean, because they need to kind of wrap up her story. And she can't survive because there's no one. We won't see her anymore in the future stories. She's not in the Lord of the Rings. So I'm thinking they're going to kill her off. And it's going to be a direct result of Keeley dying. I don't
That's
know.
Morbid, father.
I think they're going to kill her off.
That's pretty morbid. Maybe they'll both die in the battle, and they'll die right next to each other.
Or Toriel tries to save him, and then gets killed herself, and he might die afterwards.
Yeah, maybe he'll die of sorrow.
I think the no, I don't think that. But I do think that both of them are going to be are going to be killed in the Battle of Five Armies, and that is going to be the emotional. It's going to give the emotional weight to that battle. Okay, that was my prediction for today.
No, I like
more
that.
Of this
I'm
wild
remember
speculation.
That. I think we may have to incorporate a that question into the Riddles in the Dark prediction.
I think it would
so
be
we can
an
have
interesting,
you on record.
Yes, it would be an interesting topic to talk about. I love that they just add these little teasers, and then you know it just keeps me speculated and interested in
you
not
think
just
Peter Jackson's
movie.
Assassin is just put an arrow through Aiden Turner's neck for saying this in this interview.
I don't know. They might have done this on purpose.
Yeah, it is funny that these little sort of things that are in some ways seismic mm-hmm. shifts in the story get leaked out in like buried in a little paragraph at the bottom of an interview with Aiden Turner. It's not a press release or anything like that.
No,
yeah.
No. I think they know that is what you know, keeps the conversation alive. And it's interesting to see that most of the debate online is about this romance and mm-hmm. come on, no, that's not in the book. And everybody stops at that. But I think, you know, the reason that they put this in a movie, it must have, it's not for nothing. Peter Jackson would never add something to the story just for the fun of it. It must have a purpose. And I think the purpose is going to be in the second movie.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I sometimes find myself disagreeing with the choices that he makes, but I think I will give him credit that they don't generally add – they aren't adding romance because they feel they need – this isn't like some studio head telling them like, well, you need a romantic element.
Right,
so
no.
Throw one in there.
Peter Jackson is way too powerful for that.
Yeah, that he's planting – this is something he's planting with some payoff down the road.
Yeah,
that's
probably
beyond just – pure romance. So.
Or again, it might just be comic relief and it's going to be this throwaway line and it's over in 20 seconds. If that's the case, then I didn't say anything.
We'll see.
All right, what other news do we have from the world of The Hobbit?
On that article, I want to move on past it mm-hmm. Too quickly because there were some other fun little things, not about The Hobbit, but about some of the actors. So,
okay.
The other actors that were in this, in addition to Aidan Turner, number 26 is Evangeline Lilly, of course. Number 27, shockingly, Martin Freeman. Mm-hmm. Number 28 is Richard Armitage, who's playing Thorin Oakenshield. 29 is Luke Evans, who's playing Bard. And 30 is Benedict Cumberbatch, playing Smaug. So, cool. Big surprise, huh? But we learned that, I don't know if you knew this, but Richard Armitage was in Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yes. He apparently was, I think he was uncredited, and he played one of the Naboo pilots.
Cool. Now I have to rewatch that movie.
Yes. And the other interesting tidbit, which I just thought was fun, is I guess Luke Evans' career is taking off. He's going to be the villain in the next Fast and Furious.
My goodness, they're going to make another one?
Yep.
Isn't five enough? I actually thought that one was enough, but oh, wow. Okay, well, that's good for his career. You don't want to be kind of the eternal dwarf for the rest of your life.
That's right. So, on some sad news, apparently James Nesbitt's mother has passed away. It's been all over the news that he's sort of on his way back from New Zealand to Great Britain in order to go back and mourn her. James Nesbitt, of course, is playing Bofur.
That's so sad. I mean, before the launch of the movie, and wow, that's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is very sad. So our thoughts and prayers go out to him.
Absolutely.
Just some other, since I hear the music, I'll be quick. There's going to be Hobbit stuff at Comic-Con. Surprise, surprise.
Nice.
Which is Saturday and Sunday, I think the second weekend of July. And it looks like the three-hour block where the Hobbit stuff will be, it's the Warner Brothers movie whatever thing, nice. Is a three-hour block on Saturday afternoon, July 14th.
I bet you we're getting another trailer or at least more footage that will disprove all the skeptics about the quality of the movie.
Yep. And the other thing that's big is the wrap party, I believe, has been set for July 7th.
Ooh, wow. That is bittersweet in a way that it's almost over.
Yep.
Amazing.
That's all the big news.
Very cool. Well, let me wrap up things by asking you about the Riddles in the Dark. We mentioned it. What are the last few questions that you guys are discussing?
You've got some to answer when we find the time.
You got 30 seconds left to mention them.
The last three questions have been what will the Ringwraith's role in the films be? That was question eight. Question nine was, how will the film open? What will be the opening moment of the first film?
Good question.
And question number 10 was, how will they portray Bilbo's interaction with other hobbits? Basically, we were delving into the whole Took Baggins thing. And is he going to be a weirdo, or is he going to be a well-respected guy?
I love it.
And then we have a new question coming out tomorrow.
I can't wait to hear those episodes and also, you know, add my predictions to the game. Where can people find that show?
Go to Mythgard.org and go in the exclusive section, and you'll find the Riddles in the Dark section with all the posts about episodes, or search on iTunes for the Tolkien Professor feed. And we are working on separate feeds for Riddles in the Dark soon.
Perfect. Well, see you next week. And thanks to our listeners. See you soon.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.